Welcome to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a view of culture, current events, and politics through a biblical lens, with your hosts, Neil Boron, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh, and John Rush. Now let's join the conversation.
Very happy to be back with you folks for another week of the National Crawford Roundtable with John, Roger, myself, Bob Duco, and Neil Boron. So, Neil, you're back from Fiji, huh? Welcome.
We're happy back to have again.
Back again. Always great having
Come
you.
Come to you live from quarantine.
That's right. Well, this week, of course, I mean, there are so many things that we want to talk about in the podcast each week, but let's face it, there are a couple of major elephants in the room right now that everybody is still talking about, and it are very fluid situations and are continuing to change on a day-by-day basis. One is where we stand with COVID, two, where we stand with the election and the after effects. And so today, we're going to talk about the election and the after effects and where we stand on this now. A lot of different aspects that we're going to get to. Should President Trump be conceding or not? Is this, in fact, a stolen, rigged election or not? How real are the hopes and chances of the legal team actually being able to overturn this election in some of the key states? And so there's a lot of that we want to talk about this week. And gentlemen, let's just start with the arguments of the legal team right now. You got Sidney Powell, who's not part of the legal team, but she's following her own path here. You have Lynn Wood, of course, and Rudy Giuliani and team that's with President Trump. They've been holding press conferences. They've been presenting people with, you know, whistleblowers and affidavits. They've been presenting the evidence of anomalies that show that clearly there's something wrong with these votes. But I don't know that here's the challenge. Have they been able to show clear-cut evidence of voter fraud, or are they merely showing the smoke that proves that there is a fire, but they haven't been able to show the fire itself? And to me, that's what we're up against here. This is the challenge, because I look at I'll just give a quick example here. If somebody is accused of, we'll say, you know, I don't know, robbing a house, burglarizing a house, okay. If there's $25,000 missing from that house, and the suspect happened to coincidentally deposit $25,000 the very next day into his bank account, if there's three pieces of jewelry missing from the house, and the suspect coincidentally happened to give his wife or girlfriend three pieces of jewelry that were the identical kind of jewelry, but it can't be proven it's the same ones because there's no fingerprints on them. You look at that, any jury's going to go, okay, come on, common sense, this guy did it. But that's not actually fire. There's no video of this. It's kind of circumstantial evidence, but it's really strong circumstantial evidence. What I'm trying to figure out is that enough in these lawsuit cases where, hey, a whole bunch of ballots suddenly show up in the middle of the night and they happen to be overwhelmingly for Joe Biden and such, and it's walking like a duck, it's quacking like a duck. Will the Supreme Court say, therefore, it is a duck? We overturn Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan, on down the line. Let's go around the table and kind of get your thoughts on that. Roger Marsh, we could start with you. Of course, the bottom line from the People's Republic of California. Is the legal team and the legal experts, are they presenting actual fire, or are they presenting smoke that there really is a genuine fire to but is not provable?
That's a great analogy, Bob, and I think that really does typify what we're looking at here. It kind of encapsulates it, you know, in a nutshell. They're saying, look, there's smoke. I haven't seen anything. I mean, obviously, there's been some hearings. There's been some very condemning testimony and fake people voting, dead people voting, things like that. Things that aren't necessarily new to the election process. I think the biggest question is going to be, they're racing against the clock. I mean, Janet right. Ellis, our friend and colleague who was at the press conference a couple weeks ago, said, look, this is the kind of thing that takes years to put together when you bring it to trial. And we have weeks, we have days. I mean, you know, you've got the Electoral College, you know, certification coming up, what's it, December 14th.
Right.
I don't know that they're going to have enough time, even if they are able to prove this. This could go down in history as the worst rigged, thrown, whatever you want, ballot box stuffing election that we've ever seen. But can they prove it in a court of law, and can they make it stand up? And I think right now, what it looks like to me, they're showing us a lot of smoke. We're going to see there was a fire, And the question is, you know, was there enough time for them legally to challenge it? The odds are not looking good for them as far as I see.
Yeah, Neil Boron, of course, Neil Boron Live, Buffalo, New York. What's your take on that? Are they presenting actual fire? Or let me just say right now, I absolutely believe that the fire exists. I believe that there has been so much voter fraud woven into the depths and camouflaged within all of the election that's gone on. And that's the fire that I believe truly exists. But we're looking at it from 35,000 feet, and we see the smoke from that fire. And it seems to me that that's the only thing that's been able to be proven so far is the legitimate suspicion that there really is fire, but not an actual video of the fire, which to me doesn't seem enough for the Supreme Court to overturn.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually have a couple of analogies in my head. I loved yours, Bob, because it's so clear. I'm going to share another one here, and I might bring one up a little bit later on because they kind of help me think through the process of whether or not there's smoke or fire. And I mean, I just imagine that any one of us are at home plate and we're up to bat in the bottom of the ninth, game seven of the World Series, and the whole game is on the line. We're losing by a couple of runs, but we got a chance to stay in this thing if I can just get on base, you know, if any one of us can get a hit or get walked. And, you know, there's two strike count and the ball's thrown in the dirt, rolls past the catcher, and the ump calls strike three. And the game's over, and that's it.
Right.
And I mean, I know that you earlier, I guess in previous conversations, cited a Rasmussen poll that said even about 30% of Democrats lean towards the idea that there's a possible fire because they see some smoke. You know,
well, they said very likely. 30 in that poll, they said very likely it was stolen.
Okay. So now you're in the parking lot after the game and you run into the opposing pitcher from the other team and he goes, hey, by the way, just so you know, 30% of the guys in our locker room think that was a ball as well. You should have been on base. That wasn't strike three. But what does it matter at that point? It's over. However, if somebody shows up and produces a video of some collusion that went on between the umpires and the opposing team in which they were paid off, and they literally, you can hear sound and video of this, you know, action going on before the game, you'd look at it much more seriously, and at that point, the result could literally be overturned, I would think. So unless somebody produces that kind of evidence, I don't imagine that it's ever going to be more than just smoke, although the evidence is incredibly compelling.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very good point. And by the way, in your analogy, the umpire is actually represents, I think, a lot of different groups, represents many of the Democrats, but also represents many of the election officials. It also represents right. The mainstream media. It also represents Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg. And so, I mean, really, that umpire is representing a lot of people right now and a lot of groups. But no, it's a great point. John Rush, of course, Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado. John, what is your take on this, the fire versus the smoke issue, and how real and how substantive is the evidence that we at least have seen presented so far from the attorneys?
Well, and knowing the individuals, like, you know, Roger and I, specifically knowing Jenna Ellis like we do, I know Jenna well enough to know that she would not be, you know, even communicating, tweeting out, doing the things that she's doing if she didn't feel like there was some sort of evidence and proof of what's gone on. Now, I say all that to say they're up against the clock. We talked about this last week, guys, and they've got to get some things, you know, cranking along. I'm not an attorney. I don't understand that whole world. I don't understand all the processes. I mean, you know, we've watched enough, you know, over the years, you know, courtroom TV and things like that to kind of get an idea of how some of these things work. But the reality is I'm not an attorney. I don't know the back story of what's going on and what's going on behind the scenes and the evidence that's being compiled and all of that. None of us do. And frankly, I don't think they want everyone to know, because we talked about this a little bit last week. I think the more the other side knows, that actually hurts our side. So I think they're being very careful in what they're releasing and what they actually have as far as evidence goes. But, you know, it also seems like every day, and I realize there's tons and tons of conspiracy theories out there, but it just seems to me like every day there's more people coming forward, legitimate people coming forward with testimony saying, hey, I delivered 100,000 ballots over state lines that the USPS told me to do, and I'm a subcontractor.
Right.
You know, what's up with that? I mean, we're seeing those sorts of things going on. The question is, will there be enough of that as hard evidence to prove any shenanigans have gone on?
What's your take on William Barr and what he said to the Associated Press? Hey, you know,
I think William Barr is part of the deep state, and it felt like that for a long time. So I honestly, yeah. I don't feel much loyalty to that guy whatsoever. And I think I can prove that by the fact that the you know, the Barr-Durham report didn't come out prior to the election, and it should have. There would have been a lot of things there that would have been damning for the other side. I initially thought Barr was on our side, but the more you look at the guy, I really feel like he's a part of the deep state.
You know, Roger, I'm curious to get your take on something else here. You got not only William Barr, who pretty much threw the president and his legal team under the bus, which I, in all fairness, I don't know how he can say, I haven't seen evidence of widespread voter fraud yet. I don't know how he can utter those words. I don't mind if he says, look, I'm observing right now presentation of a lot of systemic voter fraud, but this is not really my domain yet. This first needs to be worked out in the individual states. Or if he wants to make a legal argument like that, fine, but even that I would have a problem with. But to me, a bigger frustration, in addition to William Barr, Roger, is the silence, for the most part, from the Republican Party. Why, if this were the other way around, you would have Democrats calling and holding investigative hearings in Congress right now. They would be holding massive press conferences on the steps of the state of the U.S. Capitol right now. They would be flanking by the dozens the legal teams at their press conferences. Right now, it's just pretty much Trump's lawyers that are out there flailing in the wind, doing the best they can, Trump and his tweets. And the Republicans, for the most part, are just silent, sitting in the back. What in the world is that about, Roger?
Well, you know, it's an interesting dilemma that they're facing, and we're coming up on a break, so I don't want to try to get
Oh, yeah, you know what? You're answer, absolutely right. Once again, one of us paying attention to the clock, one of us not. I'll tell you what, let's do that. Let's take a short break, and we'll continue a couple minutes from now here on the National Crawford Roundtable.
Be transformed by the Word of God with Alistair Begg and Truth for Life. Every weekday, Alistair Begg teaches the Bible through in-depth verse-by-verse attention to the Word of God. You can listen to Truth for Life on your local Crawford Broadcasting Station or listen online at truthforlife.org. Please support this important ministry with your donations at the truthforlife.org website or by calling 888-588-7884, and be sure to let them know you heard about Truth for Life from the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Joining me live, of course, right now on this National Crawford Roundtable is Neil Boron, Roger Marsh, John Rush, myself, Bob Duco. The four of us, of course, catching up this week on where we stand with the election results. And so, Roger, your thoughts on the Republican Party doing exactly the opposite of what the Democratic Party would do. I mean, you know the Democrats would be holding press conferences every day. They would be absolutely flanking the legal team, all standing up there. Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and a gaggle of about 50 of them would be standing behind them during these press conferences. On the Republican side, you got Trump's lawyers and their whistleblowers, and then that's it. The Republicans in the House and the Senate, for the most part, are AWOL. I understand the rock and hard place they're in election-wise, but my goodness, this is frustrating.
Yeah, it really is, and you nailed it. I mean, we would see the Chuck and Nancy show, everybody with their masks and the big gaggle around, and right. You know, the podium looking very official and very, very somber. The GOP silence is definitely deafening. You know, it's been interesting to hear our conversation so far up to this point, leading us to the fact that in 2016, there was such outrage from the Democrats, and they spent the next 4 years trying to discredit the Trump presidency, because quite frankly, this fix was in 4 years ago, and they thought they had everything rigged. And somebody screwed up. Somebody fell asleep at the switch in the swing states, and all of a sudden, 80,000 votes that weren't supposed to go to Donald Trump did, not because of irregularities, but because people showed up and voted. So this time you knew they were going to have the full court press in. It wasn't just going to be Florida with 500 different votes and hanging chads like it was 20 years ago. They were going to cover as many states as they possibly could, and they did. So now you've got this gang of three trying to work for the president to go against that. And the GOP silence is frustrating. It really is. I mean, and this is something Republicans have done forever, right? I mean, it's like they just kind of said, okay, great, now we're supposed to go back into John Boehner mode, and we're supposed to go, you know, we're going to fight against the system for the American people, but we know we're going to lose every battle, and that's how we're going to get reelected. It's really interesting. The Bill Barr case, I read some of the transcript of what he actually said, and I know he was trying to hang on to the whole, you know, well, there hasn't been an actual crime committed yet, so there's really nothing for us to investigate, you know, and he's walking a thin line there too. But I couldn't help but think, Neil, I love your analogy about, you know, the baseball game and being up to bat and how thrilling that would be. Years ago, I was talking to a guy who was an expert in youth ministry, and he was working with parents on trying to help kids keep a biblical worldview in a culture that keeps changing the rules. And he used this very analogy. He said, you know, basically what's happened in the culture is, if you use the baseball analogy, it used to be a pitcher would throw the ball right down the middle of the plate. Everybody would call it, they knew it was a strike, it was called a strike. Then we got to the point where the ball would sometimes be a little bit outside, you know, or maybe a little bit inside, but the umpire would call it that way anyway, and we'd say, hey, ump, what's the matter? But, you know, in baseball, it's not a strike until the umpire calls it. Well, now we've gotten to the point in the culture where the ball just goes outside anyway, and we get mad at the umpire when he doesn't call it a strike. You know, we have catchers who specialize in what they call pitch framing. Catch the ball outside the strike zone and bring it right in. Okay. That's the world we're living in right now. So, I mean, you've got Bill Barr kind of pitch framing, you know, for the other side, basically saying, well, I haven't actually officially seen a crime. And so that's got to be maddening. If you're Lindsey Graham, though, if you're Mitch McConnell, what do you do? How do you mobilize the troops? I mean, I'm not saying that what they're doing is right. I mean, they should be saying something. But for crying out loud, if you're looking at all of the smoke everywhere, and you're trying to prove there's at least one fire and it was arson, and someone's going to get hurt and somebody should be prosecuted, where do you start? It just seems like it's so widespread. You know, there's a lot of pitch framing going on right now, and I think we're just so used to it that the media is complicit, and we may be the only voices that are saying, hey, well, hold on a second here. We've got to recalibrate the strike zone a little bit.
Right. Well, you know, and Neil, to your point, I mean, it's a case where the pitcher is actually just whiffing the ball down into – he's basically doing a Fauci pitch, and it's not even close, okay? And it's like, strike! It's like, oh, wow, okay, yeah. Now how do you respond to this? But, you know – One of the challenges here, though, and Neil, I'd love to get your take on this and the other guys too. It does seem as though, on average, Democrats do a better job of packaging a marketing message and staying on focus and making it clear and relatable to the public in a way that your average person understands it and grasps it. The Republicans, so far, and this is what I think part of the problem is. Now, maybe I'm looking at this wrong, so please correct me if I am, Neil, but part of the problem here is all of the voter fraud is being exposed in many different ways here and there. There's so many different branches to this tree, and it's almost kind of confusing and convoluted to where it loses its effect because there's not something clear that people can focus on. And I just wish that the Republicans could simplify this and say there are three areas of voter fraud. Here's what they are. Here's category one, and here are just a handful of examples that prove category one. Here's category two. Here's a handful of examples specifically. Instead of just, we're being peppered with hundreds and hundreds of affidavits from people and whatever. But honestly, can your average American sit down and clearly articulate, here are the main key areas of voter fraud that I would argue have been proven? I don't think we're in the business, so we do this, but I don't think the average American voter out there can really wrap their brain around and clearly see what is the clear, unambiguous example of voter fraud that's been proven.
Yeah, well, I think honestly what we're seeing is, you know, if you picture when I was a little kid, I used to love to throw rocks at cars, and I got in a lot of trouble for it. But I mean, if you had a kid standing on the side of the road with a handful of BBs, and he tossed him across the road, you know, with his six-year-old arm and managed to get a couple of them on a car that was passing by, they'd hear something that sounded like, was that hail? Or did I just run over some tiny pieces of gravel or what? But if you have an older kid holding a boulder in the middle of the road and the car goes by and he throws it through your back window, you know, you're going to say, what just happened? And I think that you're right. I mean, like the branches of a tree, there's a lot of smoke happening, but not any real evidence of fire, at least that anybody can connect as being evidence of systemic, widespread voter fraud and corruption. Mm-hmm. But does that mean it isn't there? No, I don't think so. I just think they haven't shown it yet. And let me just say one other thing about the Republicans and Democrats. And I brought this up 2 weeks ago. Last week, you're correct, I was in Fiji. I absconded to Fiji. But I think I brought it up 2 weeks ago. And I said, I have always felt, this is me, this is my opinion, but I've always felt that the Republicans play nicer than the Democrats, that they don't play by the same set of rules. And I'll give you an example. When Bill Clinton was impeached and the Republicans had the opportunity to remove him from office, they didn't do it. Do you think this last year when Donald Trump was impeached that if the Democrats had had control of the Senate, they would have left him in office? There's no way. He'd be gone in a minute. And I just think that they have, you know, been working on their ground game since Trump somehow beat Hillary in 2016. They've never wanted to admit it. They never accepted that result. And they've been doing everything possible, including changing voter laws and how all this goes down in the midst of coronavirus prior to the election. And they just had a more consistent ground game that I think was designed to do one thing, and that was to destroy Donald Trump.
Right. Well, Neil, I know we got to take a break here in just a second. And so where do we go then from there, and how do we look at this going forward? Because time is running out.
Yeah. Well, let's take the break, and we'll be back with more of the National Crawford Roundtable in just a moment.
Learn how to walk the narrow path with Steve Gregg. With over 40 years of studying the Bible, Steve Gregg is passionate about teaching you how to apply scriptural wisdom to every aspect of your life. Listen to The Narrow Path on your local Crawford broadcasting station or online at thenarrowpath.com. The Narrow Path is 100% listener-supported. Please keep this vital ministry going with your generous financial support and let them know you heard about The Narrow Path on the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
You're listening to the National Crawford Roundtable podcast. My name is Neil Boron. I'm in Buffalo, New York. Bob Duco kind of leading the conversation from Detroit, Michigan. John Rush is in Denver, Colorado, and Roger Marsh in the People's Republic of California. And you know, where do we go from here? I don't know. I would love to get some input from you guys. I've thought long and hard about this. Mm-hmm. And other than, honestly, I mean, I'm sure the question, I think you referred to it earlier, should Donald Trump stay in the fight? And well, I think right now we need to, because maybe somebody's going to show up with some really compelling evidence that proves there was fire, not just smoke. And that could happen. Why? Because the future of our republic depends right on it. And let's hang in there and see what happens. But I think it's going to take a ridiculous Hail Mary to pull this thing out, because if it stays like it is right now, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and the clock is ticking. And John Rush, what about that? When is the actual deadline here? Let's think of the markers. We got December 14th. That's when the Electoral College meets in their own individual states. Then you have December 6th, which is when Vice President Pence, who serves as President of the Senate, when he in a joint session of Congress officially counts the Electoral College votes from December 14th and then certifies, if you will. And at that point, actually, that's when Joe Biden officially becomes President-elect, mm-hmm. just a message to the
right.
media, okay?
Right.
And then, of course, Inauguration Day, the 20th. But unless I'm missing something here, I can't, John, imagine the Supreme Court overturning the results of a state once the electors have been activated and cast their vote for that particular state, unless it was the absolute ultimate Hail Mary that was presented. So therefore, it does seem to me December 14th is kind of the deadline here, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say 2 weeks. I mean, I think you're spot on. I would say that there's a huge deadline approaching. I think their legal team has to know that, unless there's something, again, guys, I'm not an attorney and none of the four of us are, unless there's something, you know, constitutionally speaking that we don't know about, that is that last, you know, last minute Hail Mary that none of us are aware of, Bob. I do think that 2 week time frame that we're looking at right now is where things are at. And I like you, or I like what you said earlier. I really do feel like, and maybe it is because we're all talk show hosts and we kind of understand, you know, how some of these things should be played out. But I really wish our side would come up with the top two or three things
exactly.
that really need to be focused on. And that can be talked about throughout all of the media, the talk show world, and so on. Instead of having a dozen different things that are out there floating around, let's get down to the two or three things. You know, back to Neil's point, as far as, you know, if this were a ball game and you were fighting to the last stretch of the last inning, there's certain things that you as a ball club are going to do, and you're not going to focus on 100 things. You're going to focus on that one or two things that are going to get you across the finish line, and I feel like that's what we need to be doing. And frankly, guys, just as a side note, that's the thing that we stink at all the time as conservatives anyways. We don't do that well like the other side does, period.
Right.
Can I jump in for a second? The whole conversation is fascinating, and we've largely talked primarily about stuff like evidence of voter fraud. And, you know, people that have worked in various precincts have come forward and they said that they were denied opportunity to see the counting of the ballots. And there's all this evidences, hundreds, maybe even thousands of them. But they're all spread out. They're all over the place. There's another aspect to look at, and that's like what actually did happen in the election. You know, and let me just say this real quick. Here's the other example I wanted to use. If you said you're playing in a football game and your team didn't complete a pass and gained 0 yards rushing, but won the game, you'd say, how could that even happen? You say, yeah, your team won 43-42. And you're like, well, how did that happen? That's never happened before in history. We've never seen anything like that. But it could happen because maybe your team picked up 3 fumbles and had 3 interceptions, all returned for touchdowns. And then you went for the 2-point conversion and you win 43-42, but never gained a yard on the ground, never completed a pass. Okay, it could happen. Is it likely? I doubt it. But anyway, maybe on the other side, just for a minute, Bob, I'd love to get your input and anyone else who has anything to say about the fact that, like, Trump gained way more votes than Hillary did in 2016 in this election. Barack Obama, when he got reelected, did so with 3.5 million less votes than the first time he ran. Joe Biden got 80 million votes. This is the worst candidate in presidential history. Right. There was no blue wave. There was a red wave in every single aspect of this election. So, like, if you look at that aspect too, you go, whoa, there's a whole lot of fire. A lot of smoke if you're looking at that. Does this prove fire? We don't know. But maybe I would love to get your input on that, because I've been looking at that aspect, and I know we got to.
Let's discuss that in the second half, okay?
All right.
And folks, we invite you to listen to the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast. You can listen online several places. You can subscribe to Apple, of course, and listen to the podcast there. By the way, we love and appreciate you listeners who are giving us nice, big, fat 5-star reviews. Any of you that are giving 1-star reviews, well, on you. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, this is Apple Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn. You can also go to crawford.live as well. And we're going to continue the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast coming up next.
This has been a Crawford Broadcasting production.
Continuing the second half of the National Crawford Roundtable podcast with Neil Boron of Neil Boron Live out of Buffalo, New York, Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California, John Rush, Rush to Reason from Denver, Colorado, myself, Bob Duco of The Bob Duco Show out of Detroit, talking about where we stand in the election and the rigging and the stealing of this election, the lawsuits, and how realistic the chances are here at this point. And Neil, you were making an important point before the break, and if you could just kind of recapitulate that point for our audience.
Yeah, just basically asking the question: if we were playing Joe Biden in a football game, and he never gained a single yard or completed a single pass, as you know, on his side of the ball, but won the game 43-42, you'd say, is that even possible? Like, how in the world could that happen? Maybe his team, returned 3 fumbles and 3 interceptions for touchdowns, and they got a 2-point conversion, and they beat you 43-42. You'd say, well, that's virtually impossible. Statistically speaking, it is possible, but, coming back to the election, how is it possible that Joe Biden got more votes than any president in U.S. history when he was probably, arguably, the worst candidate ever in U.S. presidential history? Donald Trump gained 11 million votes between the two elections, his first and his second, time running for president. There was no blue wave. There was, in fact, a red wave. Right. Not only did we gain House seats in the House, but we, looks like, Lord willing, hung on to the Senate. They flipped a few state houses across the country, and there were massive gains made in Senate and Assembly seats across the country. So you add all that up, and you go, What actually happened? How is it possible that Biden came out on top in this thing? And I think it just raises more questions that, in fairness, should be investigated.
Well, they really should. You're right. And I think that, first of all, the blue wave versus the red wave, it is true that all the predictions were there was going to be a blue wave. The Democrats were going to increase their lead in the House. And as it stands, at this point, officially, the Republicans have increased or narrowed the lead for the Democrats in the House by 9. And there's still, I think, a handful of them that are out there, and the Republicans are probably going to get those. So when the dust settles, Republicans will have narrowed the lead by a good 10, 12 votes when that's done in the House. Georgia is going to be very important. I know we'll have an end up having a podcast sometime between now and January 5th regarding the significance of the Georgia Senate election. There's no doubt. But even in the state houses, in the individual state houses, do you know that across the, there is not one Republican controlled legislature anywhere in America that was lost? There were Democrat legislatures flipped to Republican, but none the other way. And an average across the board, the Republicans gained a total of 192 state House seats, 40 Senate House seats. They flipped control of three of the chambers. And so now you look at this, Republicans have majority control in House and Senate chambers in 31 out of 50 states. Democrats only got 18. So the question becomes, guys, how is it that Donald Trump loses the election in the middle of a red wave of everything else? Roger, let me ask you, Roger, let me play devil's advocate. Here's what the Democrats are going to say. They're going to say that that doesn't mean there was voter fraud. What that means is that the hatred for Donald Trump was so sky high that even in the midst of a red wave, a whole bunch of people went out and voted for Joe Biden, not because they voted for him, but that's how passionately they did not want Donald Trump to win. So this was a referendum on Donald Trump. That's what they're going to argue. And by the way, I don't mind saying that there's some truth in there, but certainly not enough to explain all of this away.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that we find very interesting, and toward your point about the red wave actually happening, there were three seats, the congressional districts 21, 39, and 48, that flipped blue, red to blue in 2018, that flipped back here in the People's Republic of California. Yeah. So it lends credence to what you're saying in terms of even in a blue state like the People's Republic of California, there was a bit of a red wave, or red white water, I guess you could call it. It wasn't a full-blown wave, but nonetheless. But when you look at the breakdowns, I've been fascinated with, ever since 2016, the aspect of, well, look at the counties, you know, that were won. You know, Hillary Clinton won, you know, 50 or 60 counties. There are over 3,000 counties in the United States. How did the counties vote? Because you can look at some of these maps, you know, and see, okay, well, this state looks completely red, like Georgia, except for two counties, and they're the big counties that have all the votes. And it seems like the Democrat Party did a great job this time in 2020. I mean, either they did it actually and got people to get out and vote, or the fake voters, the dead voters, you know, all the fraud, the smoke we were talking about earlier showed up. But when you get right down to it, in 2016, there were 237 counties that flipped from changing allegiances, if you will, either red to blue to red. And, of course, the vast majority of them were ones that flipped from Democrat to Republican. Trump won those ones. In 2020, only 77 counties flipped, and Joe Biden won 59 of them. If you strategically pinpoint these individual counties and say, we have more voters here and we can have a better turnout, when you look at the way the numbers are skewing right now, I mean, this is kind of where it all shows up. So I could see where, yes, there would be a red wave, and we've talked about, you know, especially in the House of Representatives, and can we get a hoot and a holler for the GOP pro-life women who are coming into the House of Representatives?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Fantastic turnout from the ladies. I mean, it's almost top to bottom, all those flipped seats were all gals, and I think that's fantastic. Of course, the media doesn't care about that. They're so busy patting Joe Biden on the back for having an all-female communications team, and I'm like, so what about Kayleigh McEnany and Sarah Huckabee Sanders? And I mean, Donald Trump's more to elevate the position of women in high-profile positions than just about any other president, but when Joe Biden does it, then all of a sudden it's, hey, this is great. That's right. Kind of the media bias we're dealing with.
But look, one other thing about counties. When Obama was first elected, he won over 800 counties nationwide. Mm-hmm. Biden only gained about 500 counties in this election. So, yeah. I mean, to put it in perspective, yeah, he may have flipped a few in his favor, and they may have been strategically placed in places where, you know, like Philadelphia, Detroit, Milwaukee, that kind of thing. But otherwise, he didn't show up. He didn't show up like people showed. In other words, voters came out to vote for Obama. I think the only plausible explanation is what Bob was mentioning, that there was a rush on the polls to simply vote against Trump.
But not to that level of numbers, though. I do not believe that 80 million Americans actually went out there and voted for Joe Biden. I understand the ones that did vote really voted against Donald Trump. I get that. But to the tune of 80 million, that to me doesn't make sense. But actually, John, what's your analysis, John, on the incongruities of we have a red wave and somewhere in the middle of the red wave is the biggest prize, the White House being lost?
And I think you say middle. I believe that all of what even Neil you're talking about, somewhere in the middle of all of that lies the truth. Is there some down ballot, voting that they just hated Donald Trump, so they voted for Biden, but down ballot they voted red? Yeah, I think there's some of that that went on. To the tune of the amounts that we're talking about, though, the 80 million plus. No, guys, I don't see it being that many. Would it be a few million? Very possibly, and I could see that happening. I just don't see it happening to the tune of what we're talking about. And again, I think this comes back to the evidence that the legal team needs to present when it comes to, in other words, certain ballots where only Joe Biden was voted for. I mean, is that really a legitimate ballot if only the president was elected on a particular ballot? I mean, I'm not saying you could throw all of those out, but boy, guys, I mean, I don't know of anybody in my entire life that I've ever seen vote that only voted for president of the United States and didn't bother to vote anything down below. Even if they were uneducated in who to vote for, they will typically put something in down below. I mean, I think it's a rarity to have somebody only fill out a ballot for the presidential election only.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how about ballots that were supposed to have arrived in the mail, meaning they should have had a fold or a crease in them, but had
Correct.
None and
Correct.
Were counted? They were counted, so they never arrived in a envelope. So, yeah, and is it enough to turn the election? I don't know, probably not, but it was like the media wanted to look the other way on that kind of stuff.
And you know what, if there's anything the other side did a good job of is, and let me just say it this way, and I'm not accusing anything, I don't know, I don't have the facts, this is just me guys talking off the cuff, but if in fact all of these things did happen. In other words, all of the different voter fraud things that are all over the map, and there could be 15, 20 different things we're talking about that happened. If the left was coordinated enough to get all of those things done, which, by the way, I believe they probably did, good job on their side because they basically stole an election in multiple ways, not just one way.
Right. Is it okay for us to not just now say this election was stolen, but to kind of have this as part of our discussion, as a point of history going forward, to say, hey, you know what, 2020 election, yeah, remember that was the election that was stolen by the Democrats. The Democrats have proven that they are capable of stealing an election. We got to make sure it doesn't happen again. Because, right now, we know the mainstream media and the Democrats, we know they mock us for using words like stolen. I get that, okay? But I don't think we should be shy about using that term. I kind of feel like let's go ahead and boldly declare, I'm going to look you in the eye. I'm not going to break eye contact. I'm going to say, you bet this election was stolen. It was absolutely stolen. And not that we're going to harp on that forever and ever and ever. We got to move on, new battles. But I got no problem 5 years from now going, oh, 2020. Oh, yeah, I know. That was the year that the Democrats stole the election. I got no problem saying that for the rest of my life.
I agree. I fully agree with you. And by the way, I know we got to take a break, guys, and let's do that real quick. Let's take a break. You're listening to the National Crawford Roundtable.
Dr. Michael Youssef leads the way for people living in spiritual darkness to discover the light of Jesus Christ. This tremendous outreach begins with the proclamation of God's Word through the uncompromising biblical teaching of Dr. Michael Youssef. Leading the Way is here to equip and strengthen the church to stand strong and to advance the gospel in today's ever-changing world. Listen to Leading the Way with Dr. Michael Youssef at ltw.org/listen and be sure to mention you heard about their program on the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
And we're back, National Crawford Roundtable. Myself, Bob Duco, Neil Boron, Roger Marsh. And Bob, I would have no problem saying that down the road. You know, the other side may come back and say, yeah. Well, it's just like it's the analogy of Neil talking about the ball game that got lost. Well, guys, we know that throughout history, those things have happened. Those things have gone down in history as things that were stolen and not done correctly or an umpire or a referee made the wrong call or the doping by bike riders of sorts. And I won't get into all the details there, but let's face it, guys, there's been lots of things over the years that were won that it come to find out 10, 15 years later were found out to be, a fraudulent win, and things were, then gone back in time and in a way they try to make it right. But you can't make right an election that's been stolen.
Right.
But let me just throw in that, you know, because Trump made gains in the Black and Latino communities, because he apparently made significant gains in that he himself gained 11 million more votes than the first time he ran, that I think that what needs to happen in the 4 years to come is that we focus on positives, not negatives. So I don't have a problem if people want to refer back and believe that the election was stolen, but I don't think it'll win you the next election. I think need to continue pressing on. Like Roger referred to the pro-life gains in the House. I mean, apparently the message for life is getting through, and people care about that kind of stuff. People care about, you know, secure borders, and they care about whether or not we remain a constitutional republic, or whether we go socialist and lose our freedom here in the U.S. and religious freedom amongst all of those discussions. But like, I really think we have to stay on target with that kind of stuff, as opposed to just becoming people who lament an election by, you know, crying in our in our soup and saying that, well, it was stolen and poor us.
All right.
That's Neil, not going to help us in 2024.
I want to ask you about that, though. Well, certainly I agree with you. The agenda for the Republican Party needs to move forward. But at the same time, I got to say, you can't take – and I know you're not suggesting this, but I want to be clear. We can't take something this egregious that affects an entire national election and sweep it under the rug and go, okay, well, this was yesterday's news. This is something that I do believe we need to be a seriously squeaky door over to make sure that this is kept on the radar screen, at least, if anything else, to apply pressure to the Republicans to say, you better make sure and fight and put your A game on and don't ever let this happen again and make a big issue out of this. And so otherwise, if we just move on, the Democrats are like, hey, you know what? Not only did we get away with it, not only is Joe Biden in the White House, nobody's talking about it anymore. It's yesterday's news. I don't want it to be yesterday's news. So I think we need to keep this in the forefront while at the same time moving forward with the positive message that you're talking about. But here's what I am curious about, though. Will this serve as a discouragement for conservatives to get out to the polls and even vote in the future? Or is there a sense of apathy that's going to appear that's like, you know what, why bother? You know, why would I bother watching the baseball game if I know that the umpire is just wearing the jersey of the opposing team and he's going to call strikes for Fauci pitches? Why do I even care about watching? And the only reason I say that is because, and Neil, I'd love to get your take, and then I want to get John and Roger on this. I was having a conversation over Thanksgiving with one of my sons. And one of my, and by the way, my boys are all conservative. They all voted for Trump, you know, all that. Okay. But one of them said, I got to be honest with you, Dad. I have no interest in voting in the 2022 or 2024. I just don't care anymore. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Just like with sports and the whole Black Lives Matter thing and where they've gone and taken a knee, and I don't even care. I don't know who's playing this week. I don't care who's playing this week. He says, I am really apathetic because I don't trust the system. I can't believe in it. And so why would I go vote when I just know that it's so dishonest, it's so rigged, I'm participating in, it's almost like betting money on who's going to win the WWE fight, okay? They already predetermine who it's going to be anyway. The whole thing is rigged. Why would you actually participate in something as though the outcome is potentially in question? Now, I disagreed with him, and I said, look, I know that there's fraud. I know they cheat on the left. And I know that we have to run 10 times faster. We have to run a 10-to-1 ratio to try to match. So I get the running up the down escalator, but the answer isn't to give up without a fight and then allow the other side to just run roughshod over this country. We got to keep fighting, even in an unfair fight. And so we kind of had that debate with each other. And he's like, I know, I get it. I'm just telling you, I have no interest in voting at this point ever again in this country. And that's his frustration. I get that frustration, Neil, and how widespread might that end up being in places like Georgia and every place else in the country elections forward?
Well, I'll speak for myself and I'll say hopefully it won't have that kind of an impact and keep people away from being involved in politics. But what it might do is expand people's horizons to realize that it's really about more than just how things turn out in politics. And what I mean by that is, we, in my estimation, we kind of live in a both-and world, not an either-or. Mm-hmm. And we're believers who live on this planet technically, but we weren't ultimately made for here. And I think that these kind of things can remind us that we our primary calling is to be witnesses for Christ, to make disciples and to preach the gospel, and in the process, you know, live as godly citizens here on this planet. If that involves being involved, you know, includes being involved in the political process, then so be it. And I think we need to pursue it with all of our heart. But, you know, not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord. And I think Christians primarily need to be motivated by the truth of the Word of God. Ultimately, let me just say this too. I think in the end, the truth has a way of coming out. And if there really is fire, as opposed to just smoke, if there's really something corrupt on a magnanimous scale, that obviously there was corruption. There's corruption in every election. I think Roger referred to the dead people who vote in every election, right?
Yep.
It's always happened.
Yeah.
There's all, exactly, right. That, so this kind of stuff has happened. I've never seen it in my lifetime on this kind of a scale, but if there really was a massive coordinated effort by the deep state, you know, to overturn the Trump presidency and to steal this election, it's going to come out eventually. The truth is going to come out. And what the final impact of all of that is, I don't know. In the meantime, I'm just saying that we as Christians need to continue to work hard to build God's kingdom and be faithful in doing what he shows us to do, including being involved in the political process. But that can't be our priority. That's my opinion.
No, and I think it's a very fair opinion. And one thing we do know, the deep state, okay, this is not some crazy conspiracy theory wackiness. We do know that the Obama campaign did, in fact, spy on the Trump campaign. We do know that the FBI, the holdovers from Obama, really did try to unravel a duly elected president's new administration going after General Flynn, trying to set him up as they did. We do know that they tried to push the 25th Amendment. We do know that they actually impeached the president for a phone call, for an innocent phone call. So we have seen what the, and certainly the 3-year Russia collusion investigation. So we have seen the effect of this deep state. And so to me, it's not that much of a stretch that they couldn't coordinate an effort to rig the election too. And Roger Marsh, love to get your take on this. I know we got to take a break, Roger, but love to get your take, and then certainly John's.
Yeah, well, let's do that. We'll take a break and we'll come back and talk more about what's happening in our nation. And especially, I'm really intrigued with your conversation with your son, Bob, about our generation versus a younger generation. And what does this do to Christians in the younger generation and their desire to vote in the first place? Let's talk about that on the other side of this break as the National Crawford Roundtable podcast continues.
Dr. James Dobson left a successful career in academia to preserve and promote the biblical family in America. The radio broadcasting ministry of Dr. Dobson spans over 4 decades, earning him 17 honorary doctorate degrees and an induction into the National Radio Hall of Fame. Today, Dr. Dobson continues to champion marriage and parenthood through Family Talk. Listen every weekday at drjamesdobson.org and be sure to reference the National Crawford Roundtable podcast when asked how you listen to Family Talk.
Continuing on with the National Crawford Roundtable podcast, along with Bob Duco, host of the Bob Duco Show out of WMUZ in Detroit, John Rush, Rush to Reason, KLZ in Denver, Neil Boron, Neil Boron Live, WDCX in Buffalo, New York. I'm Roger Marsh, broadcasting from my bunker here in the People's Republic of California, because, you know, you never know when someone's going to come knocking on your door and asking if you're wearing a mask indoors here in California. That's just kind of the way it is these days. Literally, that was one of, remember, we were talking about, I think last week, one of Governor Newsom's COVID requirements was wear a mask when you're eating, and then just take the mask off, take a bite, and put the mask back on. So I'm maskless today, and I realize that then you guys won't rat me out.
Governor Newsom, this is my bathroom. Yes, I know, but you don't have a mask on.
Yeah, in the shower? Really? Do I need? Okay, never mind. Yeah, Bob, you mentioned something. I had George Barna on the program earlier this week, and George has become a good friend, and he's been doing such great work at Arizona Christian University, the Cultural Research Center and the American Worldview Inventory, and he has a term that he uses called SAGECON, Spiritually Active Governance and Gains Conservative Christians. And he said the thing that was so frustrating for him watching the election was SAGECONs, which are typically people in our generation, the voter turnout was it was strong in 2016. It was even greater in 2020. I mean, 99% of SAGECONs were voting and saying we're into this, and 97% voted for Trump, and more than just Trump, though, I think they voted for the Republican platform. Can't stress enough that for some people this was a referendum on the president, but for other people, I mean, if you take the candidates away and look at the platforms, it seems virtually impossible to me that anybody in the body of Christ would not support what the Republican Party says they stand for compared to what the Democrat Party says what they stand for. Right. The question, though, is what about the SAGECONs as we get younger? And that's where the numbers start to diminish. And that's where you begin to see that while there were 23 million SageCons who cast votes in the current election, there may have been as many as 25 million people who identify as Christian who said, either I'm sick of it, it doesn't work, the system's rigged, or I can't vote for either one of those guys because they're morally bankrupt. And it's a huge challenge because I'm in the same boat. My kids, we have six between the two of us, and they're all of the millennial or Gen Z age, all active in the political system. And when it came time to conversation at Thanksgiving, which, by the way, we had all the kids, all the spouses, 1.5 grandchildren with us. It was fantastic.
I'm telling Gavin.
That's right. Well, I'm broadcasting this here for crying out loud, so I guess, I realized that I'm going to hear that, pretty soon. But nonetheless, we didn't talk politics necessarily because everybody knows where we all stand. There were a few people who were happy that Trump was gone. There were a few people who were sad that America seems to be going down the toilet. But in terms of the engagement level, I was happy to see everybody voted, everybody was engaged, everybody was, reading up on it and had an opinion on it. And I think that's something that we really have to be intentional about in the baby boom and Gen X generations, is to help the younger generation see, to Neil's point, when you are rendering to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, one of those things that includes is also, paying your taxes, of course, but also being a good law-abiding citizen. If you have the right to vote, exercise it. Please don't sit on the sidelines. Don't look at the system and say, it's corrupt, the system's rigged, so therefore I can't participate in it. All the more reason. God placed us here for such a time as this.
Right. John,
let me add one thought real quick. I'm sorry. Just because it's kind of lingering out there, and I'm afraid the podcast will end and I won't get a chance to say it. Just that I think, I don't think any one of us would want to be the umpire who has determined not to call fair balls and strikes. So, if the ball's in the dirt, it's a ball, and you get a walk and maybe score a run out of it. But the point is that, like the Watergate scandal in the 1970s, I don't want to go too far back or get off the rails here, but, it was a Republican thing. And, if we were having this conversation about the Watergate scandal, would we have been supporting the break-in or what? Certainly not. So my point is, even today, I think we need to recognize that while we stand in allegiance with the Republican Party platform for the most part, we look at what it says and we go, how in the world could you not support this agenda versus what we saw in the Democratic Party platform? Which one represents a biblical worldview? I think that's kind of a no-brainer. I totally agree with you, Roger. 100% agree with you. But at the same time, all of us are imperfect individuals, and I'm not trying to soften the level of our conversation here or anything like that. I'm just saying we need to recognize that the Republicans don't speak for God, and conservative politicians may not even be believers, and the Word of God would consider them enemies of God. So, we kind of have to separate in some fashion the conversation so that people can understand that we may support conservative values, but they may or may not be biblical values at certain times. And just in fairness, because a watching world looks at all that and they say, who are you guys anyway? I don't always understand why you vote the way you do or why you say the things you say, because are you saying that no Republicans ever make mistakes and everything they say is stuff we support? Well, no. So in fairness, let's at least acknowledge that as we have these discussions.
That's an excellent point.
Right. And so let's toss it over to John now. John, what would you say to somebody like my son? My son, he's in his 30s. Mm-hmm. I never thought I'd utter those words. My son, who's in his 30s. What do you say to this generation that says, I'm done. I'm done with these elections. The futility, this has exposed, the fraud and the election rigging has exposed to me the futility of voting. How do you respond?
I think you'd have to say, yes, you're correct. And yes, that has happened. And by the way, it's not the first time in the life of our country that has happened. And if we go back in time and we look at all of the great individuals, men and women alike, that did the things that kept this country the way it is today, do you not want to be a part of that future and keeping our country that way? And you can't just bow out and expect things to continue to get better on down the road. If you bow out, they will in fact get worse. The only way we have in our country right now in keeping things moving in the right direction is to fight for that. And in that case, it's by voting and doing the things that we know we need to do, by being involved as Christians. And guys, this is a future topic for a podcast and why Christians need to be involved in politics and try to keep us on the right course. Because the reality is, if our founding fathers had done what your son is talking about doing, we would not have the country we have today. That's how I would respond.
Very, very true. And by the way, Roger, I know we're running out of time here, but you live in California, of course. You do your show, The Bottom Line. It's, you know, up and down the left coast there. You know, when you go to the polls and vote, that California is not going to go for Trump. You knew that. You knew the 55 electoral college votes in California are going to go to Biden no matter what. Yet you still went and voted. And this is one of the things I told my son. If I lived in California, I would still vote. Even though I know the electoral college outcome in the state is a lost cause, it's because morally, for a sense of principle, I've been given a vote as an American, and I feel like I have a responsibility to use it in a way that honors God. And burying it into the ground, I don't think honors God. So even if it's a losing effort, even if I'm on the Titanic and it's sinking, I believe I still have a responsibility to try to bail out water, slow the sinking as much as possible, and try to get as many people's lives saved as possible, even though I know it's going to sink. So I think we have a responsibility to vote in California. And for the same token, then, I would argue nationally, even in a rigged election, we fight against the rigging, but we still do what is the right thing to do, even if it doesn't produce the result that we want.
Amen. Hear, hear. And I know that when I was casting my vote here, and Lisa did as well, there were 12 ballot propositions that were going to potentially put California further and further in the hole as far as money. There were some things involving stem cell research from some organization that really doesn't do anything to produce any sort of scientific good, any sort of benefit. It's just a $5 billion tax grab. And unfortunately, people were duped by it. I mean, there were things that were impacting our lives all the way through. Obviously, who it sits in the White House is a very, very important role. But there are other parts of the process as well, and I hate to see so many people throwing the baby out with the bathwater simply because their presidential candidate didn't get elected, and it always seems like every time I vote, it doesn't seem to matter. I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of people who voted for Joe Biden because they wanted to restore the soul of America are going to be shocked when they find out how much corruption comes out of this campaign and how much corruption comes out of this administration. I mean, it's just, it's a recipe for disaster right now, and yet it seems like for a whole generation of people, and many people in the body of Christ, too. I'm seeing a lot of folks that I, you know, was surprised to see, you know, as Christians, they said, good, it's about time we got rid of Trump because of, you know, he just, I don't like that man. It's like, well, yeah, but look at the pro-life advances and look at the foreign, you know, the foreign diplomacy, religious liberty being at the centerpiece of this guy's platform. Nope, it was no interest to them because he said some rude things on television a few years ago or whatever it was. Right. You know, no politician, no candidate is perfect, but we are living in kind of strange times right now where we have to kind of sit here and kind of look at the world around us and ask the question, well, have we hit that 2 Timothy 4:3 bit where we've come to the point where people will no longer stand for sound doctrine, you know, whether it's from the pulpit or whether it's from the political leaders? I think we're there. And we just have to, we got to navigate it.
People are surrounding themselves with a bunch of people that will say what their itching ears want to hear, no doubt.
There may be, we've been talking about corruption and scandal that may have happened all over the country, but I don't know, John and Roger, from where you guys are at, can you see the level of smoke billowing out of Detroit? Because it's been wafting over Buffalo since Election Day, so coming straight from Detroit.
No, I'm telling you, I got right now, I'm struggling from smoke inhalation in an ugly way. It's like, this is brutal, you know, so... it is crazy what's going on here. But you know what? We are seeing it all over. Hey, let me do this here real quick, because I know we're coming up on the end of the podcast here. And I am kind of curious. I just want to do like a final Jeopardy question, lightning round around the table. Should or will Donald Trump show up at the inauguration? And should he? John Rush, what do you say?
Yes.
Yes, he will and he should, right?
Yes and yes.
I think we're probably all in agreement that he should. Will he? So you think he will. Okay, what do you say, Roger?
Should he? Yes. Will he? No.
Oh, really? So you think he will not show up at the inauguration?
No, I don't think he will.
It'd be very interesting. What do you say, Neil?
Ultimately, at his heart, I think Donald Trump, I mean, for all the accusations of ego and everything else, I think he really does want to put America first. So should he? Yes. And will he? I believe he will.
I think he will, too. I really think he will, too. We'll find out. Roger may put egg
Roger
on.
Then.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, People's Republic.
He's a conspiracy theorist, though. I mean, him and Gavin out there, you know.
It's all the smoke. I can't see the truth and the logic through all the smoke.
Yeah. What if I throw one more caveat into that by saying, and I know this is a long shot, but I think he shows up because he'll be president again.
Oh,
look at you. There we go. Oh, there's the plot twist.
That should have been the final Jeopardy question. So do you actually really believe between now and December 14th the Hail Mary pass is going to be completed? Is that what you're saying, John?
You know what? Stranger things have happened.
Well, I know, John. Okay, hey, Johnny politician. We know stranger things have happened. The question was, do you believe this is going to happen?
I'll tell you next week.
Yeah, okay. I'll tell you on the 15th. Okay. Yeah, good safe bet. The politician. Which team do you like in the Super Bowl? They're both great teams. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Roger, do you have any optimism left really for the last 2 weeks?
I don't. I mean, I'll be honest with you. And the reason is not because he doesn't have a competent team. I think the lack of support from his own within his own
right.
party,
exactly.
the fact that there are so many different places where there's smoke, to try to find one place where you can prove there's fire and that the same people lit it and all those other places. I just think they're going to run up. They're going to run out the clock. I'm hoping, because you and I, all four of us, want truth and justice to prevail. I think
right.
in our heart of hearts, people on both sides of the political aisle don't want to think that we're a banana republic and that there are coups and that you can rig elections. We don't want the U.S. to become that country. So mm-hmm. we really do want election integrity. But something tells me that the fix was in on this one so widespread and so concentrated and so well executed that it's going to take a miracle. And, you know, quite frankly, for the people who said 4 years ago, well, God gave us a reprieve in putting, you know, keeping globalism out of the White House because Hillary Clinton didn't win. If God wants to give us another reprieve for four more years, he can make that happen. I mean, I believe in absolutely he can make that happen. Right now, on the face of it, it looks like they're going to run out of time.
Well, hey, you look at how much Donald Trump got accomplished, consolidated in 4 years anyway. This was a pretty powerful four-year reprieve, even though we would have rather had an eight-year reprieve or maybe you know, a 12 or 16-year. So, folks, it's another National Crawford Roundtable podcast in the archives. You can listen to this podcast and all past podcasts at crawford.live. You can also subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. And again, we thank all of you that give us nice, big, fat five-star reviews. And Neil Boron of Neil Boron Live out of Buffalo, New York, Roger Marsh, Comrade Roger from The Bottom Line out of the People's Republic of California, John Rush, Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado, myself, Bob Duco, The Bob Duco Show out of Detroit. Gentlemen, great talking with you. Very curious to see where we stand in this election race next week on the podcast. Thanks for all your input, everybody. And folks, we appreciate all of you listening to us. Thanks so much. See you guys.
Thanks guys.
Thank you. Have a great
week.
You bet. God bless everybody.
This has been the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Download and subscribe to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Apple users can rate the podcast, and we'd appreciate your five-star rating. National Crawford Roundtable Podcast returns with a new discussion each week. Be sure to watch for the notification on your podcast app. This has been a Crawford Broadcasting Company production.